Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10-7 through 12-1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can always listen live on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. But we're now also streaming on the TuneIn Radio app as well as the iHeartRadio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How are you?
Doing well, my man. We've got our company as he is each and every Thursday on the program. Writes about college football. College basketball for CBS Sports. You can follow him on X at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day to you, and happy week zero. We are under 48 hours until the beginning of college football season, which makes me excited, and I will be at one of those week zero games, Jeffrey.
Are you going to Western Kentucky?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to Ireland, and I'm not going to Hawaii. But yeah, I'll be in Bowling Green, Kentucky, for Sam Houston and WKU.
So we were joking with our boy Topmeyer last week about what were the Iowa State fans going to do if, like, they can't get their Busch Light over there. He said he would go in spirit, because I did think it was funny to think about some, like, Iowa State fans, like, going to the airport and trying to check three cases of Busch Light just to make sure they could bring it with them. But apparently Busch Light does a special edition farmer's can, and he's like, I grabbed 24 of those, came home excited to tell his wife about what a great day he was having because he found 24 cans, or the 24-pack of the farmer cans, and she could not have cared less.
Yeah, Blake's from rural Illinois.
Yeah,
so he's on that Busch.
Those
Light
are his
train
people.
Too.
Yeah,
yeah. What is it in Ireland? Is it? It's not Heineken. Is
Guinness.
It Guinness? That's what it is.
Yeah. Guinness, Killian's. Guinness. By the way, it ain't cold there.
If the Iowa State fans start trying to crush Guinness like it's Busch Light,
yeah,
boy, that could become a bad scene.
All right, so where are you on week zero? Because I have found, with this particular version, I think last year's was pretty similar. When you get to this type of schedule, yes, we will take football. We will take football that counts. But I will just find myself on Saturday, as I'm celebrating my daughter's second birthday, I need more. Like, my thing is, I've always hated the idea of week zero. Either start the season or don't. And my whole thing is, make week zero week one, because I do think, of all the problems I actually have with the playoff, the biggest one for me is I thought it just took way too long. By the end of it, I was just kind of like done.
Absolutely. So if you're going to drag the season out to late January, One way to fix that or to make it not drag into late January is to make week zero week one. Clearly, these guys are able to get on campus and practice in time to play a game in, you know, late August. So
we've managed to move up every other school system in the United States of America. They figured out ways to go earlier.
Yeah, so I'm going to get about halfway through the third quarter of Kansas State, Iowa State, and be like, huh, so this is it, huh?
God forbid, and typically Big 12 games aren't this way, but God forbid the game not be close, and then you're going to, like, start searching, like, where's the other games? Because, like, that's the thing about college football. We have way more blowouts in college football, but it's usually okay on a Saturday because you'll just scroll and find another game.
Yeah, there are no other games until 6:30 Eastern, so 5:30 Central. If the 11 a.m. Kansas State versus Iowa State.
I thought we had Fresno KU at 5.
No. Okay, so here's what it is. You've got Kansas State, Iowa State at 11, which we hope delivers. But the next game is Idaho State at UNLV at 3, but it's not even on, like, mainstream TV. It's on the Mountain West Network, which... Well, I don't know. Dude,
You have to, like, stream it from your phone or your computer up to your TV.
I mean, I'm as excited for football as anybody, Jeffrey, but you will never catch me hooking up my phone to stream on my TV Idaho State versus UNLV. I mean, I can't make that
promise.
Well, I mean,
there's a reason why I knew exactly how to do that.
Yeah, well, you're probably looking at some action on that. It's Dan Mullen's debut. I don't want to downplay it. I'm just saying I'm going to be preparing.
Oh my God! Time. Did you see Dan's troll this week?
Saying he wants to get to the playoff.
No. For those that don't know, despite spending a large portion of his career covering Ole Miss, I have a soft spot for Dan Mullen. A, I think he's a good football coach. But B, I just kind of love his ability to troll at all times. I've always found him to be an entertaining character. He tweeted out, I want to say maybe it was Tuesday, he tweeted out a list of, like, it was like, come to Vegas, come to UNLV, one of the safest campuses in the country. It was like UNLV was the safest, and then also included in the list was most dangerous, and Gainesville was 2. And I was like, I'm sure that was by coincidence.
That's fantastic. So yeah, welcome back to college football, Dan Mullen. Yeah, I'll be excited. I am excited for week zero. That excitement, most of that excitement though, is that I'm actually going to get to see a football game in person and you know, from a nice seat in the press box and all that. But you know, week one is honestly like, it's the real deal. Week zero is just like it's an appetizer that's not even very good. It's like ordering mozz sticks that have been. That are like 4 hours old.
I was gonna say it's the thing they give you for free at the restaurant.
Yeah, it's like I was really hungry. Now I've had a bite of this, and I think I'll just wait and save my appetite for.
You know what it's like for me. I love the Belmont, but if you go to the Belmont and you're starving, the Belmont always leaves the saltine crackers on the table, and then you wind up just eating 12 packs of saltine crackers. Like, yeah. That's what it is.
Now, low-key think Stanford, Hawaii could be interesting to cap it off week zero, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 Central. On the
Did I see
CBS.
Y'all are sending Nestler?
Are we? I mean, I guess not a bad gig to go to Hawaii.
No, I mean, well, our boy Tim Murray, Tim has a work trip. So he's tight with Timmy Chang. They got it sold and made some money for VSIN, and he's going to, I think he's probably there now.
Tough gig, man. Somebody's got to do it. I think Hawaii might win that game, which would be fun.
I think they might, but that's also why I'm a little, trusting Hawaii's not a good place to be. Because there's I know this might be a generationally bad Stanford team, but there's been really bad, like, 2-win, 3-win Stanford teams that have still beaten Hawaii.
Yeah, the alternative to trusting Hawaii, though, is trusting the train wreck, which is Frank Reich coaching at Stanford under the direction of general manager Andrew Luck with a team that has very little talent.
It's Captain Luck, please. General Captain Luck.
And, you know, Hawaii actually has, like, a real home stadium now. And they got a little...
It's still that... The practice field that they
Oh, is it? They still haven't.
Yeah, so they've gotten the approval to finally. They're finally redoing Aloha Stadium, but that's still like they've gotten the apparently building in Hawaii is like building in LA. Like, if you announce a plan, because like I think back when I was at Pepperdine, they had this giant plan for this new, like, really reimagined campus that included a new arena, and they acted like they were going to break ground before, like, I was a junior. That will be opening this fall.
Well, I honestly had no idea you went to Pepperdine. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, first time hearing that. But, like, yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. You deal with the Coastal Commission. You deal with, like, all these people. Apparently in Hawaii, it's the same thing.
Okay, well, I'm sure they'll make it look good on CBS.
It's always fun. I think they like kick field goals into a parking garage. There's like one of those parking garages behind the end zone.
At least Memphis isn't the only under construction college football stadium right now. Oh, how about this? Sam Houston, now their opener is at WKU, but Sam Houston is going to play its home games an hour from campus this year while their stadium is under construction. I mean, an hour. You're already going to be struggling to draw at Sam Houston because you play in the most college football crazed state and everybody already has their other allegiances.
Oh yeah.
Now you put the games an hour away. That's rough.
Are they redoing their whole stadium?
I don't know if they're redoing or building a new one, but it's completely
I didn't know Sam Houston had that kind of coin.
Yeah, well, it makes you grateful, right, though? At least Memphis can still play at home. Like last year, Kansas had to go and play games in other stadiums away from campus and all that. Like, yeah, it's not ideal for the Liberty Bowl to still be under construction, but at least you can actually play your games there and you don't have to rent out Arkansas State Stadium or something to go and get your games in.
How many points do we think the new KU stadium's worth?
Well, based on relative to how bad it was last year, I mean, I would say 6.5. I mean, I think Kansas might be pretty good.
Yeah, because I was just trying to wonder. It's like that line with 13 is Fresno, and I feel like everybody always wants to take Fresno in non-con games because they still think Pat Hill's coaching there, like anytime, any place, anywhere. And if you've gotten a look at Fresno recently, not so much.
The Jeff Tedford, Kalen DeBoer days of, you know, big-time offense, eh. You know, David Carr is not walking through that door.
No, he's most certainly
not walking through that door. So, I actually kind of like that. KU minus 13.5.
Well, that's what I was thinking. And this is the new stadium bump.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's finally done. I'm not going to lie. It's not the prettiest stadium. Like, it looks more like a European football stadium than it does an American college football stadium. It's a little too modern, I guess, for my taste. But hey, I mean, it'll be bumping at least for the opener.
They got good. They had good fly throughs. Like when they did the drone fly through, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, it definitely. Nice. I'm not sure I'm in on this new trend where we do the lights and the music on these like straight poles, like that go like if you look at like the upper deck, there's like these poles that stick up. You're like, what are those? And that's like lights and speakers. I think I'm not really in on that trend.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. But it's everything nowadays is like, oh, how cool is your return from the commercial at the end of the third?
Yeah,
quarter?
How good is like, your light show?
Yeah, and like what quintessential local musician do you have blaring over the speakers?
Yeah, what song that is loosely affiliated with where your campus is? Can we play to start the fourth quarter that everyone will get crunk with?
Hey, whatever gets the young people to post on TikTok. You know, it's crazy, man. Like these little moments that happen in college football stadiums, like become the things that define a program to like the younger generation of fans. For example, we encountered some people this week who are from Ohio. They're big Ohio State fans. And, you know, they learned that Sarah and I are Tennessee alums. And they're like, oh yeah, the tear down the goalpost school. And it's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And they're like, yeah, hey, you guys are the ones who tore down the goalposts after, who was it that you beat? And I was like, you know, the Alabama game?
As if Tennessee's the only school that tore down the goalposts?
Yeah, but like, I actually think, you know.
Sorry that when y'all get into your big games, you keep losing them.
It's what people see on Twitter and TikTok that like they associate with a school in this era. So like, I get it. Like, people are going to try to do whatever they can to be trendy.
Yeah, that there's no question, like, the social media moments are, like, what are defining the schools. Because, like, I have to know, has there ever been a girl that's a freshman rushing that has decided I am going to this sorority because of this TikTok dance video.
Because in my experience
with sorority girls, it's like they want to get into the best sorority they can get into.
Yeah, but hey, maybe it alters the perception of what is the best sorority if you have the best TikTok dance.
I guess, but it feels like it's like all of them do it.
They all do it, and it feels like there's a moment, too, right now with like people from all over the country wanting to go to SEC schools because, oh, the game day experience looks so fun, and I want to have this unique, like, these unique fall Saturdays and all that. And, I mean, as somebody who kind of lived that, granted, I was working pretty much every Saturday during college, but there's so much more to the college experience than fall Saturdays. Like, I'm not saying you shouldn't factor that in, but I wouldn't move from the West Coast or the East Coast or whatever just because of what SEC football is on Saturdays. That seems to me a bit of a strange thing to base your college decision on.
Yeah, I mean, I will say going to a school where we had some athletic history, but the modern times made it really difficult. Like, we just weren't that competitive. I did kind of miss going to like big games, but I'm wholeheartedly, would I have gone to a different school? No. Yep. The only thing I would consider is like, did I think my school was worth it? Well, that's a completely different argument. But like,
I mean, if you're going to like pursue a career that's related to athletics, then by all means, like choose a great like sports school. Like for example, I mean, I looked at a lot of other colleges, and then, you know, in the end, even though Tennessee stunk at literally everything while I was there, it was still covering SEC sports that, you know, kind of helped me.
Well, it's like even when Tennessee was bad, the buildings were full.
Well, and it gave me great stuff to cover. I mean, it was a constant dumpster fire.
No, yeah, covering disasters is, there's always something.
Yeah, it's
because people start talking, which is also which is phenomenal. All right, so let's celebrate. We got coming up on the program. Eric Hasselstein's going to join us here in about 15 minutes or so. We'll get into the list. Cobb's got a list of the 10 most overrated football programs of the decade. We'll discuss that. Jason Smith's going to join us. We got the Tiger basketball at a conference schedule. We'll go through kind of what has caught his eye. We knew the teams, David, but now we know the dates and we kind of know the situational spots. So we'll go through that with him as well. Here's what I wanted to start with you. So, obviously, you've covered the Grizzlies. You're someone who's lived downtown. When you read Sam's two stories earlier this week, like, what was your initial reaction?
I mean, honestly, I think my reaction is actually a tad bit gloomier than maybe the consensus reaction. My reaction is that what this feels like to me is via back channels, the Grizzlies are laying the groundwork for if they were eventually to decide to move, that the onus and the blame for that would no longer be on them and on greedy Robert Pera and the Grizzlies. It would be more on the city of Memphis now, because they've sort of signaled, communicated their needs, their desires, their wants for downtown Memphis. And as a result of doing that, they've shifted the ball over into the city's court. And if for whatever reason, like, we can't get to a resolution here on a long-term lease, I think the reason why you do that is because, now people will be mad at the city instead of being mad at us. So that's kind of where, how I see it. But in the end, I mean, are all these things achievable, and are these obstacles that can be overcome? Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think if they were dead set on leaving or something, we would, you know, it would be a lot more obvious. This can still get done, but if for whatever reason it doesn't, the blame won't be solely on the Grizzlies now. The blame has been shifted in large part to the city itself.
Yeah, I think the primary question is, okay, what was your, before you read that, what was your confidence level about getting a long-term lease? I think that's kind of where it starts. Because, I'm greatly influenced by the people that I've talked to. I've known the negotiation wasn't going well. So I took it as, listen, this isn't good, but I was able to like find a couple of positives. So to me, I actually thought the biggest positive was, all right, this bought them some time. Because what I was really worried about is like, hey, man, if it's going to have to be like, you've got to show all these improvements in the next like 12 to 18 months, it's like, I don't even know if that's realistic. Like first off, it's confusing as to what they want. All we know that they want is they want a nicer neighborhood. Okay. Could you be more specific? Are you talking specifically you want Beale Street to look different? Do you want all of the areas around it to be developed? Like, could you be more specific? And I'm hoping that at least the city, through communication with the Grizzlies, is aware. Like, I know when Jason Wexler like takes certain people on tours, like Beale Street's a big part of it, but I got to be honest with you, if the whole goal is we got to get Beale Street looking different, I don't have a lot of faith in that because,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you, but can you remember any time in your life when Beale Street looked demonstrably different?
I mean, but just because it's never changed doesn't mean that it can't or it shouldn't.
Right. I guess, though, this is my problem. We would be talking about that type of redevelopment. I mean, that in of itself might be more than the renovations of the arena. If like the whole idea is that. So my thought was, I'm also not solely blaming the city. Like, I think there's probably some corruption on Beale Street. Like, I think there have been plenty of people that have had the desire to reimagine Beale Street, and it's never been done. And I'm not willing to say that that's because the idea was bad. I think there's hurdles there. But my idea is, all right, there's still other land around the arena that I'm sitting there going like, hey man, I'm giving up on Beale Street. Like, I'm letting them be them. What I would say is like, can we explore what it costs to develop and build new stuff around it so that then Beale Street's got to figure their way out into, all right, do we want to compete? But the problem is like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I wish you could kind of flip-flop the locations of South Main and Beale Street and have South Main with its more family-friendly vibe, your more day-to-day, non-touristy sort of attractions right there in the neighborhood of the arena, because then I think you would attract more residential sort of more residential feel, like more of a local feel around the arena as opposed to a touristy vibe. There's nothing wrong with the touristy vibe, but if you've lived in Memphis for any period of time, your appetite to take your family down to Beale Street is rather minuscule. Whereas like, South Main has things that are interesting. Birdies is down there. You can go with your family or your buddies to Birdies. And it's not a touristy vibe. You can go to the arcade and eat Elvis's famous banana and peanut butter sandwich, and
yep.
Like there's certain fun things to do on South Main that are like feel like less of an ordeal. Like going out for a night on Beale, whoo, that's an ordeal.
Like, now you gotta hydrate. You gotta prepare yourself. Like you need like a locker room talk before you go.
There needs to be just more sort of casual strolling, more of a laid back vibe. Beale Street does have the pedestrian friendly aspect already going for it. I mean, there's cities all over this country that are redrawing traffic patterns to get the vehicles off of their marquee streets. Beale Street's already there. Yep. So it's, I don't think Beale Street is hopeless, but,
when I say hopeless, I don't mean it in the sense of like, it's pure anarchy there. My point is, I don't have the faith that it can be redeveloped in the way that I think the Grizzlies want it to be, which is, for those that are like, slamming their hand, like, what do you mean? I think what they have in mind is what you see at a lot of these new stadium redevelopments, where it's like they keep the facade, but then they basically gut all of these buildings and they're all like brand new. I just don't know how realistic that is. Like, I would think there have been plenty of people that have had that concept before and it's never been able to be done. But what I do know is, there's a lot of space around the Forum that can also be developed and come up with new concepts and the things
strong civic leadership to execute on something like that with these vacant lots and these all these development plans.
Well, it's like, who owns it? I don't know.
Well, right, but like, you need a third-party organization outside of the Memphis Grizzlies, outside of the city
of
Memphis itself.
In fairness to them, what they would tell you is, like, that's the downtown commission, which, by the way, how's it going?
Yeah, but also that, you know, for example, I lived in Chattanooga for a while during and then after college, and they at the time were on the exciting end, the hey, we did it end of like a downtown revitalization that, you know, in the 70s, 80s, early 90s, people referred to Chattanooga as the dirtiest city in the country. Nobody went downtown. Literally, every street was one way to funnel workers in and then funnel workers out. It was not a destination. There certainly was no NBA team in that city. And they were able, through nonprofit investment and organization, to get everybody on the same page. The problem right now is that you have two factions that are not on the same page. I mean, you have the city of Memphis, which has a gazillion other issues and problems and priorities. And then you have the Memphis Grizzlies that are saying, well, hey, we have a really compelling product and company here. And what they need is a third party organization with like the brain trust of the city of Memphis, the corporate leaders from FedEx and AutoZone to be on these boards, along with fifth generation wealthy Memphians who have coin to spend and clout. These people need to get in a room and say, okay, let's all figure out what's not best for you, what's best for me, what's best for us as a city. And that's ultimately what's best for Beale Street, what's best for the Grizzlies. Like, it's a rising tide lifting all boats. But that tide is never going to rise if all the players involved are only looking out for themselves. And so, you know, I don't know what that looks like or what that organization might be called, but there's got to be some central organizing body that can actually take some of these things that the Grizzlies are wanting and like figure out a way to put in a 15. These things don't happen overnight. This is a 15, 20, 25, 50-year plan that you have to put together to revitalize your city. I mean, these things don't happen on accident. I mean, it's taken Detroit a quarter century to breathe life back into their downtown. And so,
yeah, well,
I mean,
let's take Detroit, though, because this is, I know Detroit is, I believe Detroit to be one of the examples that the Grizzlies have used when they've had their conversations. Detroit deserves credit, but y'all, Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cavs, is from Detroit, and he basically like gave him $500 million. And so, like, I know when everyone wants to point to that, it's like, this is where...
All right, well, JT, where are you at, right?
I don't think JT's got that kind of coin.
I mean, he's one of the most high-performing recording artists of the 21st century. I would think he's...
Dan Gilbert has... I might have manipulated the housing market to become a multi-billionaire money.
Fair. But
he did the same, and then everyone uses Cleveland. It's like, guys, the same thing. The exact same thing.
Yeah, but it's also more than writing a check. Like, thank you. That's awesome. But like, we need people to get together in a room and actually talk and get a pencil out and start writing down ideas and then going to the downtown commission and going the city.
I guess that's where this is what I would say is, I think people know the ideas. I think the problem is the execution of the ideas. That's where I guess I differ with you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. It's upsetting to me because this to me feels like the closest there's been to an ultimatum, and it's a very soft.
Yeah, no,
ultimatum.
I totally.
The Grizzlies are being very nice. They're not coming out heavy-handed. They are not kicking and screaming. They're not making threats. They're not even putting their names on it. They are just signaling quietly, "Hey, we want this to work. Here's what we need," and subtly, slowly but surely, kind of shifting the ball into the court of the city and where they go from there. I mean, I don't know. You can sit here and blame COVID all you want to. You can sit here and blame the suburban folks who don't want to go downtown or whatever it is. But there have to be. You can't just say, "Hey, suburban people, quit being scared." Like, you can't just sit around and hope that eventually happens. I think that's That's ridiculous. You actually have to take action. Take action and showcase downtown. Here's something I think would work, Jeffrey. Get a bunch of people with large social media followings in Memphis to, you know, pay them to go out downtown, pay for their meals, pay for their parking, pay to have an armed security guard walk around with them, for crying out loud, and then have a post on their social media accounts about how awesome of a night they had in downtown Memphis. Because then, you know, Sally Joe, who only never leaves Germantown, says, oh,
yeah,
wow, this looks like a really fun night out in Memphis. Maybe I'll get the girls together and we'll go downtown.
I totally love this idea. Like, I would be consulting like every mommy blogger, like every mommy influencer out there in the world. Like, I'm sitting there going like, hey, let's come together on a campaign.
I think that was a huge part of, I think there was a renaissance of sorts. I don't know if I can exactly fence the time parameters in which it transpired, but for me, during high school, 27 to 2011, well, I couldn't wait to leave Memphis. I thought Memphis had a monopoly on all the world's problems. I was going to leave and never come back. Well, you know, around that time, people started to really take pride in the city. Social media was taking off. People were posting about the different things they were enjoying in the city. The grit and grind era really started to happen, which was, to me, who was more interested in sports than like dining and that sort of thing. I was like, all right, this is cool. There's an awesome NBA team in my city now. And those things sort of worked together from, let's say, 2010 to, I would say all the way up until COVID.
No, I think it's that it's the 2010s. I think that's the peak because, and like you said, there was also, that was the makings of the kind of being overly aggressive as a city of like Memphis Pride, like almost the point it was like it had been such a negative self-view for so long. It kind of became aggressive in the other direction. But I think if we had as much as like, I can find that mentality annoying as well. Like, I would rather have that right now.
Well, it's more than just being defensive or reactionary about what people say about Memphis or what their perceptions are. It's actually taking action. So it's not just reacting when somebody says something mean about your city. When Stephen A. Smith gets on ESPN and has some pretty bold opinions about what he's heard from NBA players, right? Like, everybody can get on Twitter and react to that. But like, okay, are you going downtown? Are you a part of the solution here? Are you investing money on South Main? Are you, legitimately looking at maybe living down there, right? I mean, it's those things. And, you get to our age, man, and we all see it. Like, you're still in the city limits, but a lot of my friends now have slowly migrated eastward, people who did live downtown shortly after college. And I don't think that's too different than any other city. But the problem that I see now is that when people do pick up and move to East Memphis or move to Germantown or wherever they go, I don't think they come back and visit or hang out in the old downtown streets maybe as much as they used to. And, that's a problem.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hastein joins the program next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM. Yes.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer for 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Program is brought to you by our good friends down at Birdie's. Cobb just mentioned them during the opening segment. They're down there in South Main, the historic South Main district of downtown. And right now, going on throughout the month of August, it is discount season at Birdie's. Discount season means bigger discounts for more players. If you have four players or more and you book a tee time in the simulator in advance at golfatbirdies.com, four players or more, you'll get 40% off the rate. Threesomes will get 30% off. Twosomes, 20% off. Singles will get 10% off as well. Also, during August, you got the membership special you can take advantage of. Buy a full membership and receive a six-month practice membership for free. You can check out all the details at the website, golfatbirdies.com. Birdies also offers you the spot to host your fantasy football draft. They'll help put your draft up on one of their big projectors. So just send them a DM on Instagram. They can help set it up for you, golfatbirdies.com. That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer to the program. He, of course, is Eric Hasseltine. Eric, rather than get your thoughts on, you know, lease agreements and stuff that we have no legal precedent over, I wanted to discuss this because you go to every arena in the entire NBA. What are some ideas that you see that, you know, because there's some stuff like when I go to LA, when I go to Staples Center and I see LA Live and I see the Nokia Theater, I'm not asking Memphis to recreate that, but like, what are some ideas around the city that you think are like legitimately feasible?
Well, I mean, look, I'm not.
We're asking you to spend other people's money, which is basically what this show's become this week.
Look, you have a situation where the arena is located next to an entertainment district that in some parts is dubbed historical.
Yeah.
And but with that designation, it's hard to just renovate. It's nothing against the businesses down there, but the buildings are older. You know, when I hear people say, oh, make it like Ballpark Village, I'm like, how do you plan on doing that? The stuff they did at Ballpark Village was built 10 years ago, not 100 years ago. So I think they have to figure out the balance there. There's no secret to it right now. Beale Street business is down. Yep. It's gone down. The numbers are not the same as they once were. Truth be told, businesses all over are down. You know, I'm sure people now know that after I started doing live reads when I was in that chair that you're sitting in for Black Tie Moving, I had an opportunity to buy into the company. And so I did. And our business is down. That's just because the market is down.
Jeff's trying to sell a house.
I think, you know, we hear about it. The market is kind of stagnant. And when real estate markets are stagnant and interest rates stay where they are, there's not excess wealth being generated. There's not excess economy being driven by, some homeowner saying, hey, I'm in a 3-bedroom right now. I've got equity. I can take that equity. I can get into a 4-bedroom and in the process, keep my payment the same, pay off my debts and put some money in the bank because I've built the equity and my payments, the interest rates are not going to drive the payments higher. We're not in those times anymore. And that changes how people spend their disposable income. And things like going to games, going out to bars, going out to that, to dinner go down. I mean, look, I'll be honest. I see a lot more people in my neighborhood hanging out at their friends' houses, staying in and watching games there where you have HD TVs and 97 different ways to watch a game with different angles and different announcers. And those advancements in technology are fantastic, but they impact the people going out, you know? And so if I were to say one thing, like, you can't compare it to LA Live, you can't compare it to Ballpark Village, but say, just take for example, I don't know, you really can't compare it to San Antonio.
Yep.
There is nothing to do around the San Antonio Arena. When I say nothing, I mean literally nothing. But they keep the bars and restaurants in the, you know, in the whatever you want, the concourse, they keep one open.
Yep.
For an hour after. I don't know if that's feasible here. I believe that the Grizzlies have tried that and it didn't work because you have bars right across the street that, let's be honest about it, are selling a draft beer for cheaper than what you're going to sell it for in an arena. We all know arena and stadium pricing, they go up. And so that's kind of where you get hamstrung by having, you know, as an organization to keep your eating and drinking establishments in the arena open, is that you have to charge a certain amount because that's just what it is. And so people are not dumb. They're not, you know, if you can walk out the door and walk across the street and get, you know, your favorite beverage for half the cost of what you're going to do by just staying in the arena, you're probably going to walk across the street. Most people are probably going to take those extra 500 steps and go that way. And I get that. In the same aspect, they've got to find a way to work together. They've got to find a way to make people want to stay downtown and be there. So, you know, Houston runs into a similar problem, in my opinion. I've been to a Rockets playoff game this year. After the game, people just kind of rolled out. The yep. areas around the Toyota Center, there are some bars, there are some restaurants. They weren't, by no stretch of the imagination, were they busy. And I think sometimes people get the misnomer that, you know, you're drawing on 25,000 people at the game. You're not. Like, the building only holds 17-1, and that's if it's sold out and every seat is occupied. I mean, look, they sell a lot of tickets, but things happen. Kids have games and plays and concerts and band events and whatever, and people get sick and, you know, business comes up. And so there are nights where people that have bought tickets can't go. And if they can't give their tickets away, you know, they are sold. The team collected the revenue, but the seats are not there. And so that person's not there. So you're not drawing 100% of the people willing to stay after the game either. People have jobs. Games get out at 9:30. If you live 20, 25 minutes away with the 20, 25 minutes it takes to get out of the arena area, then you got a problem. So, you know, people are more apt to say, let's get out of here. If we're going to do something, maybe we'll do it closer to our house. So, I don't know, man. It's tough.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that fact, because I know the NBA, they did their PR, you know, more in-person attendance than ever before. Like, it was up again. But when you go to other arenas, are you seeing the same issue in which, to your point, like, tickets sold versus people in the arena are a different thing? And I just feel like when I'm watching night in, night out, and I'm watching a lot of NBA arenas, I'm not exactly seeing full houses, but I know that they get announced as sellouts. I'm wondering if that's more of a league-wide issue than it is just specifically here.
I know. I think it's all over. It's not every city. Look, I mean, there are certain places where, you know, let's use Golden State as our first example.
Yeah.
The arena's in San Francisco. They are drawing fans from as far as an hour and 10-minute drive away. Those people are leaving work at 4:30 and driving into the city. And so they are getting to the arena, they are going there, and they have obviously built the area up around the new Chase Center. When it was at Oracle, brother, it was in and out. There was nobody there. And there would be people walking in as many games as they, you know, they were winning during this was the beginning of the stretch before they moved to Chase Center. And their games were one of the hardest tickets to get. You'd get to tip off and there would be, you know, a quarter of the people weren't there. So this is not foreign. People get held up, traffic, parking, whatever it may be, underestimating how long it's going to take to get into the building. I've seen that many times in our games where you look out and you're like, oh boy, you know, I know I talk to the ticket people. I kind of try to gauge what it's, you know, what's expected. Ticket sales have been there for us over the last decade. And so I like to get an understanding. You know, maybe there's a game that was a second night of a back-to-back on a random Wednesday, and it's not going to be as packed. How do we, you know, generate that energy on the broadcast? But they're still doing their jobs. Those guys work really hard, man. So I think it's a league-wide thing. And there's been plenty of buildings where we've gotten to tip off. And as I look, I'm like, oh man, there's like hardly anybody in here. But then I look up at the end of the second quarter, you know, the end of the first quarter into the early second, and it's increased significantly. So for whatever reason, take it for what it's worth. I do think that there are times, you know, with teams where people are, you know, more apt to say, hey, I don't really feel like going tonight. The team's not playing very well. And rather than go down to the arena and use these tickets that I've already paid for, but on top of that, spend X amount of dollars in parking and dinner and drinks and entertainment, I'm just going to stay home tonight. I'm just going to skip it. I'll see if somebody can use them. And if they can't, then, oh, well, they're already paid for, you know, because you start paying for season tickets way before the season. It's not like you're going up to the window, you know, with a bankroll and or a credit card and saying, here, I want to go into the game now. Now, there are other people that do that. And I think sometimes that's where you see those later arriving fans, people that say, hey, let's go to the game tonight. Let's see if there's tickets. Oh, there are. Let's get on our phones. Let's hop in the car. I've done that with my friends. We've done that. You know, Rob Fisher and I have done that on the road. Did it for a Stevie Wonder concert. We were in L.A. last year. Just said, we may never get a chance to see him ever again and how long he performs. And we looked for tickets and we found two tickets that were within a price range we were willing to spend. I'm like, let's do it. Come on. These are the memories we make when we're doing this job. And those are the people do that with NBA basketball games, with Major League Baseball games. So I do think, you know, it's a process. And we're at an interesting time in our country's economical, you know, standards where we just came out of a time where interest rates went up significantly. People are not moving because why am I going to move out of this house that I can afford right now that I'm comfortable in just to get a little bit more space, but my payment's going to go through the roof. I'm not doing that. I'm going to keep paying this one down until I pay it closer to being off and take my time with it, and then I can make a decision. Whereas before, when interest rates were low and you're like, okay, well, I can pay extra on my house, I can pay extra on my house. You know, we were talking about that just a minute ago. That changed the economic structure of this. Grocery prices are up. Gas prices are up. Your electric bill is up. Everybody's prices are up. I get it, man. I know it's a struggle. I only have one kid. I look at families with two and three kids. I have two, but one's in college and kind of on her own. But, you know, I look at having one in the household and I'm like, oh boy, like what if you have three and four, what is your grocery bill? Because I know what mine is. And I know my kid eats a lot, but he's not exactly quite the human garbage disposal that he's going to be as he continues to grow into his 14, you know, soon to be 14-year-old self. And that's where you start hitting puberty and your growth spurts. What's other people's, you know, grocery bill when mine is X? So, and then you want your kids to do things, you know, taking piano lessons, singing lessons, karate lessons, take your pick of their extracurricular activity. It ain't free. It's not free. And so I just think you're running into that situation where people are having to be smarter and not as free spending. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see what this presidential administration does to the economy. The one thing that seemed to happen the last time he was president was the economy got stimulated. We were kind of rolling through things. But are those days long gone because of post-COVID mentality or because of things? I don't know. You know, I don't have a crystal ball. I wish I knew. The people that do know or think they know, if they're right, they usually make a lot of money speculating these things. But I think as professional sports go, the other things that's happening, Jeffrey, and I think you'd agree with me on this, as the values of franchises continue to increase, and if you look, I would challenge you to do this, and I'll try to do it too for next week. Let's look at tenured owners in the NBA and how long their tenure is. You're not going to find a whole lot of people that have been there like 25 years.
I mean, it's basically like what, Reinsdorf?
Reinsdorf in Chicago, Dolan in New York. The DeVos family maybe in Orlando.
I was going to say, what about
hasn't
the Miami guy owned it for a while?
Mickey Arison, yeah. He's been there. But, you know, teams have been bought and sold. And so the guys that, like Robert Parra is one of the longer tenured guys. Robert Parra is going to, you know, if he ever cashes out, he's going to see a significant return on his investment. I mean, like real significant. But the guys that are coming in now, I mean, look at the Boston deal. It could go up to $7 billion to buy the Celtics. yeah, if you bought them for $1 billion, you know, 10 years ago, and you're going to make $6 billion in the deal, I'm like, yep, okay, cool. I don't know what the postal code for Aruba is, but I'm going to go there and build a, you know, a compound and retire very nicely, something like that, you know, or whatever the people want to do.
Well, I mean, too, I've got it in front of me. So the buses were the longest tenured. They just sold. Then you go to Indiana with Herb Simon, who owns 80% of it. Reinsdorf.
Yep.
Portland was included, but they just sold.
They just sold.
So DeVos in 91.
Yeah, the DeVos family from Orlando that did Amway.
Holt at San Antonio.
San Antonio, Peter Holt, yep.
We mentioned Arison.
Yep. Dylan Fertitta is not that long for the Rockets.
Dolan.
He's been recent.
Dolan.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, that's, you know, basically most of the league acquired their team post-1990, and about half of the league acquired it post-2000. Almost two-thirds of the league. Almost two-thirds of the league. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say even more. Like, I would say almost half have acquired it post-2010. I mean, you're talking about Matt Ishbia and Phoenix. If you add in now Boston and Portland selling, that's three. Vivek Ranadive in Sacramento, the guys in Golden State, that's five. The Lakers make it six. You know, Steve Ballmer was...
It's 18. 18 owners have bought in post-2010.
That's more than half the league.
Yeah.
So you think about it. So this is the other thing, the point I'm getting to. These people have spent billions on these teams. They're trying to recoup that. Ticket prices are going to go up. Concession prices are going to go up. Parking is going to go up. That's the natural progression. They're not going to be cutting people breaks, and they're not going to be looking for ways to make it more affordable. And does that price out the common fan? Yeah. And sometimes when that happens, as you know, the common fan gets mad. Hey, I want to build the memories I have with my father going to whatever team you went to go see. Like for me, it was Raiders games, A's games, some Warriors games, more Warriors games as I got more into high school and got more into basketball with the, you know, the Magic and Larry and Michael Jordan effect on the league. But when I was, you know, in 1982, we didn't go to a lot of Warrior games. One, the Warriors weren't great, although I did love volunteer legend Bernard King and Purvis Short and the guys that played for him. They were fun. And not to mention Hank McDowell, who was my partner, and I didn't know him as a player as a kid, but you know,
I knew him as my second grade basketball coach.
A fine coach he was, I'm sure.
One of the best.
But, you know, those are the memories I have and how I became a sports fan. Now more and more people are making those memories in their living room watching the games because, you know, you don't want to take your kid and sit them in the upper deck if you can afford to sit in the lower deck. You want to sit in the lower deck. Well, lower deck seats between $100 and $200, depending on where you sit, depending on the game. They want to see their star players. Well, the star players now, they started going to staggered pricing. I get it, man. It's a business. These guys have to do their jobs. And my friends that work in the ticket and sponsorship sales, I get how hard it is, man. These guys are grinding and they bust their tails and they are really, really good at what they do. But you can only, you know, you can't force someone to use their disposable income. Gary Parrish, I remember saying on a show once, I was, you know, when he was there and I was listening on my way home, he says, you know, I love to say to the Grizzlies fan base, this team deserves your support, except I will never tell somebody how to spend their disposable income. They may have earned.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speedtest. So baseball fans are connected to the Fall Classic from home to home plate with the most advanced 5G, more towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever before. T-Mobile has you covered. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Best mobile network based on analysis by Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data, first half 2025. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Once upon a dismal day, Bob's ice cream van looked gloomy and gray. Although he had big ambitions, his socials lacked creative vision.
That bad?
Maybe vamp it up a tad?
I have an idea.
Bob launched Canva and got into gear.
Create the video in the vampire theme and make it the funniest meme.
It went viral. Bob's business, a revival. Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.